I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. New York, this is Democracy Now!
Today we're bringing home Paul, Evan, also Vladimir. Three American citizens and one American green card holder. All four have been imprisoned unjustly in Russia. Russian authorities arrested them, convicted them in show trials, and sent them to long prison terms with absolutely no legitimate reason whatsoever. And now their brutal ordeal is over.
A historic prisoner swap. We'll look at the negotiations that led to the freeing of Americans, Russian human rights activists, and others jailed in Russia. We'll speak with Katrina Vandenhoevel, Russia expert and publisher of The Nation magazine. But first, fallout continues from Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump's racist comments about his Democratic opponent, Kamala Harris, at the annual convention of the National Association of Black Journalists.
I didn't know she was black until a number of years ago when she happened to turn black, and now she wants to be known as black. So I don't know, is she Indian or is she black?
We'll get response from Mark Lamont Hill, a member of the National Association of Black Journalists and host of Upfront on Al Jazeera.
What Donald Trump was mad about was that he was about to be asked a question other than, why are you so awesome?
As Mark Lamont Hill joins us from Philadelphia, we'll also speak with him about news Kamala Harris may pick Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro as her running mate. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich, former Marine Paul Whelan, and Russian-American journalist Alsu Komarsheva landed in the U.S. late Thursday after being freed from Russian custody in an historic prisoner exchange, the largest between Russia and Western nations since the Cold War era. The three were welcomed at Joint Base Andrews in Maryland by President Biden, Vice President Kamala Harris, and their family members, who rushed to embrace them as they stepped out of the plane. Biden spoke earlier in the day, surrounded by the released prisoners' relatives.
Three American citizens and one American green card holder. All four have been imprisoned unjustly in Russia. Paul for nearly 6 years. Vladimir since 2022. Evan since March of 2023, and Alsu since October of 2023. Russian authorities arrested them, convicted them in show trials, and sentenced them to long prison terms with absolutely no legitimate reason whatsoever, none.
Russian-British dissident Vladimir Karamurza, who has a U.S. green card, was also released in the swap, what was not on the U.S.-bound flight. In total, 16 political prisoners were freed, including human rights defenders and journalists. Five of those released were German. In return, eight Russians were released from prisons in the United States, Germany, Norway, Slovenia, and Poland. Among them, Vadim Krasikov, a convicted Russian assassin who is in German custody after the 2019 killing of a Chechen dissident in Berlin. We'll have more on this story later in the broadcast. We'll speak with Katrina Vandenhoevel, publisher of The Nation. In Qatar, thousands have gathered for the funeral of Hamas's assassinated political leader Ismail Haniyeh in Doha. This is Heba Ghazi, a mourner who's originally from Egypt.
We came here today to provide moral support to the Palestinian people and the Arab people, to bid farewell to the body of Ismail Haniyeh. He is considered a leader of the resistance against Israel. He was the essence of the negotiations. He was the main side of the negotiations, speaking on behalf of the resistance. His assassination has for sure assassinated the negotiations.
Protests and others And other gatherings are also taking place today across the Arab and Muslim world. Israel summoned Turkey's deputy ambassador after the Turkish embassy in Tel Aviv lowered its flag to half-mast in a tribute to Hania. President Joe Biden said late Thursday Hania's killing had not helped the situation in Gaza and the region. Meanwhile, new reports say an Israeli bomb that was smuggled into a Tehran guest house 2 months ago, then remotely detonated on Wednesday, is to blame for Hania's death. The Hamas leader was in Tehran to attend the inauguration of Iran's new president. Also in Doha, Al Jazeera journalists gathered at the media network's headquarters to condemn Israel's targeted killing of their colleagues, Ismail Al-Ghul and Rami Al-Rifi, while they were reporting in Gaza on Wednesday. Al Jazeera refuted Israeli claims that it targeted Al-Ghul because he was a Hamas operative. Al Jazeera said the claim, quote, highlights Israel's long history of fabrications and false evidence used to cover up its heinous crimes, unquote. In Gaza, at least 15 Palestinians were killed in another Israeli strike on a school sheltering displaced people today, as the official death toll nears 40,000. The true death toll is certainly much higher. In election news, as the Democratic National Convention kicked off its virtual roll call vote on Thursday, the uncommitted national movement is calling on the Democratic Party to allow Dr. Tanya Hashhasin, who volunteered in Gaza, to take the stage at the DNC later this month. Dr. Tanya Hashhasin, pediatric intensive care doctor, has been outspoken about the horrors she witnessed treating war victims in Gaza. She's one of 30 delegates representing the uncommitted movement after its successful campaign got over 700,000 primary voters to cast ballots for uncommitted instead of Joe Biden to protest U.S. support for Israel's war. Dr. Hashhasin appeared on Democracy Now! In March after she returned from 2 weeks in Gaza.
This is not a humanitarian crisis. This is the worst of what humanity is capable of, and it's entirely all man-made. And when you witness it firsthand, it's an unbearable injustice.
Democracy Now! Will be in Chicago with daily coverage of the Democratic National Convention, expanded to 2 hours daily from August 19th to August 23rd. In other election news, progressive leaders are throwing their weight behind Missouri Congressmember Cori Bush ahead of her primary election next Tuesday, as the pro-Israel lobby group AIPAC is throwing millions of dollars to smear Bush and fund her challenger, St. Louis County Prosecuting Attorney Wesley Bell. AIPAC's Super Political Action Committee United Democracy Project already unseated another squad member, New York's Jamal Bowman, earlier this primary season. Congressmember Bush has been an outspoken defender of Palestinian rights and against Israel's war on Gaza. Dozens of Jewish activists and allies staged a mock press conference and protest Wednesday at the White Plains headquarters of Atlas Air to call out the company's role in fueling the war on Gaza. Activists posed as Atlas executives and handed out flyers designed to look like marketing materials, but that read, Atlas Air, we fly for genocide. This is Jake Levin from Jews for Racial and Economic Justice.
The U.S. government sends so much support to the Israeli military that it contracts with private companies to send these. It doesn't have enough planes to send the amount of bombs that they are trying to send and planes and tanks that they're trying to send to Israel. It's not right. Is what it is.
Atlas Air is the world's third largest cargo company, has hundreds of millions of dollars in federal contracts, and received $18 million in New York State tax breaks and subsidies. In Sudan, the UN has declared a famine in the Zamzam camp in the besieged North Darfur city of El Fasher. The camp houses 500,000 displaced people. UN warns at least 13 other Sudanese regions are also on the path to famine amidst the protracted civil war, which has ravaged the country since April 2023. In February this year, Doctors Without Borders warned one child was dying of starvation every 2 hours at Zamzam. Nearly 40% of infants and toddlers were malnourished. In Nigeria, at least two people have been killed in northern Niger state as security forces fired on demonstrators amidst a growing nationwide anti-government protest movement. Protesters are calling for an end to corruption, the soaring cost of living, and bad governance. This is activist and journalist Abiodun Sanusi speaking from Lagos Thursday.
Things have been expensive in the market. Nigerians are suffering. Nigerians are hungry. Nigerians are angry. As you know, in Nigeria today, a lot of people are unemployed. The issue of insecurity in the north and the southeast continues to increase every day. So we are here to just make our grievances known to the federal government.
The Biden administration's recognized Venezuelan opposition candidate Edmundo Gonzalez as the winner of Sunday's contested presidential election, a move expected to add to tensions with President Nicolas Maduro, who has called for a new revolution if the U.S. and other foreign actors continue to challenge his re-election for a third term. Venezuela's electoral body declared Maduro the winner Monday, but his rivals have claimed they have proof that Edmundo Gonzalez received more votes, but have not made this evidence public. Here in New York, the chief of the Honduran National Police has been sentenced to 19 years in prison after pleading guilty earlier this year to cocaine trafficking charges. Juan Carlos El Tigre Bonilla was extradited to the United States in 2022 and was expected to go on trial with former Honduran President Juan Orlando Hernandez when Bonilla accepted a plea deal. Bonilla was accused of deploying Honduran armed forces to protect drug traffickers and enable the flow of cocaine shipments in Honduras while committing widespread human rights abuses while receiving the backing of the United States. Former Honduran President and longtime U.S. ally Juan Orlando Hernandez was sentenced to 45 years in a U.S. prison in June after a jury convicted him of cocaine trafficking. In Texas, Eddie Canales, a tireless advocate for immigrant rights and founder of the South Texas Human Rights Center, died this week at 76 after a battle with pancreatic cancer. Canales was well known for setting up water stations around rural Brooks County for migrants traveling through the brutal border landscape and for helping families who are searching for loved ones who've disappeared or died during the treacherous journey. Canales spoke about his work several times on Democracy Now!, including just last year.
Migrant deaths has continued to happen until we have a policy that makes sense to in terms of receiving workers that are coming through, essential workers that are coming through to provide and contribute to this economy in this country. And then also at the same time, you know, deal with the lack of human rights from their home country.
In Missouri, 52-year-old Christopher Dunn was freed this week after spending nearly 3.5 decades in prison on a now-overturned murder conviction. Dunn, who is Black, was convicted in 1991 when he was just 19 years old on eyewitness testimony of two young teens who later recanted. Dunn's conviction was overturned last week, but Missouri's attorney general blocked a judge's order for his immediate release, delaying his freedom until Tuesday this week. South Carolina's Supreme Court ruled Wednesday death by firing squad is a lawful method of state-led execution, and it does not constitute cruel or unusual punishment, since death row prisoners can also choose to be electrocuted or die by lethal injection instead. The ruling means the state could soon resume executions, which have been on hold since 2011. The ACLU of South Carolina said, quote, "Execution is a costly, ineffective form of cruel and unusual punishment that not only fails to make us safer, but raises the possibility of the state killing innocent people in our name," unquote. And the Navajo Nation has temporarily banned any transport of uranium and other radioactive material over its land without an explicit approval. The executive order issued by the Navajo Nation President, Boo Nigren, will be in effect for at least the next 6 months. Earlier this week, Navajo police attempted to stop two trucks carrying uranium ore across the reservation from an Arizona mine to a Utah processing mill. Nigren said Energy Fuels, Inc., which owns the mine and processing mill, did not provide any notice that the trucks would be crossing through Navajo Nation. Nigren said in a statement, quote, "We're taking the stance of interpreting and executing the law to ensure the safety of our people and respect for Navajo sovereignty," unquote. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. Coming up, we speak with Katrina Vandenhoevel, Russia expert and publisher of The Nation magazine, about the historic prisoner swap that led to the freeing of Americans, including the Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich, as well as Russian human rights activists and others jailed in Russia. But first, we go to Mark Lamont Hill, a member of the National Association of Black Journalists, as fallout continues from President Trump's racist comments at the group's annual convention. He said Kamala Harris just recently, quote, turned black. Stay with us.
I said no. No, you can't have him. The from me. No, you really don't love him. And if it were so, you haven't the right. We have something together, and you're gonna be in for a fight. No, I said no. You caught his fancy. So
the answer is no, performed by Abby Lincoln. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Later in the broadcast, we'll go to Katrina VandenHeuvel, publisher of The Nation magazine, about the historic prisoner swap. But first, fallout is continuing from Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump's comments Wednesday when he was interviewed at the annual convention of the National Association of Black Journalists. NABJ President Ken Lemon told Axios Trump nearly refused to do the interview when he learned he would be fact-checked. Lemon said he was about to, quote, craft a statement saying he decided not to go on stage because of fact-checking. We couldn't compromise on that, unquote. As he prepared his statement, Lemon said Trump walked onto the stage. In some of his most inflammatory remarks, Trump questioned Vice President Harris's black identity, even though Harris, whose father is a Jamaican economist, mother an Indian scientist, Indian-American scientist, has consistently identified as black and South Asian. Harris called Trump's comments, quote, the same old show, after Trump previously questioned the American citizenship of President Barack Obama and Republican Nikki Haley. At the NABJ convention, Trump was questioned by three black women journalists, Fox News Channel's Harris Faulkner, Semaphore's Khadija Goba, and ABC's Rachel Scott, who began the interview.
I want to start by addressing the elephant in the room, sir. A lot of people did not think it was appropriate for you to be here today. You have pushed false claims about some of your rivals, from Nikki Haley to former President Barack Obama, saying that they were not born in the United States, which is not true. You have told four congresswomen of color who were American citizens to go back to where they came from. You have used words like animal and rabbit to describe black district attorneys. You've attacked black journalists, calling them a loser, saying the questions that they ask are, quote, stupid and racist. You've had dinner with a white supremacist at your Mar-a-Lago resort. So my question, sir, now that you are asking black supporters to vote for you, why should black voters trust you after you have used language like that?
Well, first of all, I don't think I've ever been asked a question so in such a horrible manner, a first question. You don't even say, hello, how are you? Are you with ABC? Because I think they're a fake news network, a terrible network. And I think it's disgraceful that I came here in good spirit. I love the black population of this country. I've done so much for the black population of this country, including employment, including opportunity zones with Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina, which is one of the greatest programs ever for black workers and black entrepreneurs. I've done so much. And, you know, and I say this, historically, black colleges and universities were out of money. They were stone cold broke. And I saved them and I gave them long-term financing and nobody else was doing it. I think it's a very rude introduction. I don't know exactly why you would do something like that. And let me go a step further. I was invited here and I was told my opponent, whether it was Biden or Kamala, I was told my opponent was going to be here. It turned out my opponent isn't here. You invited me under false pretense. And then you said, you can't do it with Zoom. Well, you know, where's Zoom? She's going to do it with Zoom, and she's not coming. And then you were half an hour late, just so we understand. I have too much respect for you to be late. They couldn't get their equipment working or something
Mr.
was
President,
wrong.
Mr. President, I would love to answer the very question on your rhetoric
question.
And why
I have answered
black
the question.
Trust you with another
I have
years.
Been the best president for the black population since Abraham Lincoln.
Better
That's
than,
my answer.
Better than President Johnson, who
answer.
Signed the Voting Rights
and
Act.
For you to start off a question and answer period, especially when you're 35 minutes late because you couldn't get your equipment to work,
in such a hostile manner, I think it's a disgrace.
The NABJ traditionally invites both Republican and Democratic presidential candidates to the convention every election cycle. Democrat Kamala Harris is reportedly in talks to do a virtual question and answer session with NABJ next month. For more, we're joined in Philadelphia by the longtime journalist and member of the National Association of Black Journalists, Mark Lamont Hill. He's host of Upfront on Al Jazeera English and a nightly YouTube show called Night School. Also professor of anthropology and urban education at the City University of New York Graduate Center, and the co-author of Except for Palestine, The Limits of Progressive Politics, and author of We Still Hear, Pandemic, Policing, Protest, and Possibility. Mark, welcome to Democracy Now! Can you start off by responding to this opening of the joint questioning by three Black NABG members, that's Black journalists, of President Trump?
Good morning, Amy. It's good to see you. Always good to be here. I wish I could say I was shocked or disappointed. This is exactly what Donald Trump does. He came in to the room. He was disrespectful. He was condescending. He steamrolled the interview. This was an opportunity for him to make a presentation to Black journalists and to Black voters. And instead, he was nasty. He was vile. He demonstrated all the misogynistic and racist and patriarchal sensibilities that we would expect from Donald Trump. And of course, he spent a lot of that time simply lying. To say that NABJ was 35 minutes late to start, not only kind of play and that the equipment doesn't work, plays on this idea that, you know, the Black journalists can't get it together, that Black people show up late and that the stuff doesn't work. When in fact, as you pointed out, it started late because Donald Trump was resisting the idea of being fact checked. He was resisting the idea that people could actually hold him accountable for the things that he says that are not true. Because if you do that, then he has to explain how he's spreading such inaccurate information about people on the other side of the border taking Black jobs or misrepresenting his contributions to HBCUs and all the other things that he says makes him the greatest president for Black people since Abraham Lincoln.
I want to go more to what Trump said when being questioned about Kamala Harris. This is ABC News' Rachel Scott.
Some of your own supporters, including Republicans on Capitol Hill, have labeled Vice President Kamala Harris, who is the first Black and Asian American woman to serve as vice president and be on a major party ticket, as a DEI hire. Is that acceptable language to you? And will you tell those Republicans and those supporters to stop it?
How do you define DEI? Go ahead. How do you define
diversity, equity, inclusion?
Okay, yeah, go ahead. Is that what your definition?
Give
me a definition
the
then. Would you give me a definition?
DEI.
Give me a definition.
Sir, I'm asking you a question.
No, you
very
have to
direct
define
question.
It. Define it for me, if you
I
would.
Just defined it, sir. Do you believe that Vice President Kamala Harris is only on the ticket because she is a Black woman?
Well, I can say no. I think it's maybe a little bit different. So, I've known her a long time indirectly, not directly, very much, and she was always of Indian heritage, and she was only promoting Indian heritage. I didn't know she was Black until a number of years ago when she happened to turn Black, and now she wants to be known as Black. So I don't know, is she Indian or is she Black?
She has always
but
identified
you know
as a Black woman.
I respect
she went to a historically
either
Black
one.
College.
I respect either one, but she obviously doesn't, because she was Indian all the way, and then all of a sudden she made a turn, and she became a Black person.
Just to be
Mark Lamont Hill. By the way, we were really focusing on playing Rachel Scott and the other journalists' questions because I think they were very significant, especially as Rachel Scott continued to follow up and continued to be attacked by President Trump.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the fascinating things is you have to watch it two or three times, that interview, to actually hear some of the pushback and hear some of the follow-ups, because Donald Trump simply steamrolled. He yelled over them. He talked over them. He ignored them. He basically filibustered. They had 36 minutes, and he may have answered substantively three or four questions because of how he responded. But specifically with regard to the Kamala Harris thing, Donald Trump did several moves that are just, you know, textbook Trump. First thing he does is when he's presented with a question that he doesn't understand, he presents it back to the questioner as if they don't understand it. He did the same thing to Laura Ingraham the other day when she asked about his pronouns and gender fluidity. He says, well, what are pronouns? What do you think about pronouns? Because he doesn't actually understand. he doesn't actually understand what DEI is, but he understands that it's often used as a kind of racist trope against black people to suggest that they're unqualified for the things that they get. What he could have said is, of course she's qualified. And he doesn't even have to address the DEI part of it, just say she's qualified, I disagree with her, she's my opponent. But that would be too decent. Instead, he attacks fundamentally her racial identity. He says that she used to be something else and now she just became black. That's simply untrue. Kamala Harris grew up with a very clear identity, both of her Indian mother, Indian American mother, but also of her Jamaican father. She is black. She's indisputably black. We could have lineage questions about whether she's African American or not, but she's certainly black. Black is a diasporic identity. She went to Howard University, an HBCU. She pledged a historically black sorority, the first, Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated. She was a member of BALSA in law school. When I met Kamala Harris 20 years ago at BET, you know, we were doing Hip Hop Versus America. I mean, at every moment, whether she's doing Tavis Smiley's State of the Black Union or whether she's advocating for black people, she's very clearly and indisputably black, and she's always identified as such. I disagree with her profoundly on issues. I'm not saying that we share the same political ideology, but she's certainly black. But this is an attempt by Donald Trump to create a wedge between Kamala Harris and black voters. And there's a slice of black voters who are looking for a reason, and a slice of white voters who are looking for a reason not to vote for Kamala Harris, and he's just trying to give it to them.
I want to go to Semaphore's Khadija Goba questioning Donald Trump at the NABJ convention as part of this on-stage interview.
So, Sadia Massey, someone from Illinois, an unarmed black woman, was shot the other day in her home by a deputy sheriff. The deputy has since been charged with murder. You said police would get immunity from prosecution if you win. Why should someone like that officer have immunity, in your opinion?
Immunity?
Immunity.
I don't know the exact case, but I saw something, and it didn't look good to me. It didn't look good to me. Are you talking with the water, right?
Yeah, well, police unions are not backing this person either.
Okay.
But again,
are they going to be charging the officer? I guess they're charging the officer.
So why should he receive immunity?
Well, he might not. I mean, it depends. It depends on what happens.
Mark Lamont Hill, your response. Of course, he's talking about Khadija is raising the issue of the police killing of Sonia Massey. The police officer has been charged with first-degree murder. Ben Crump and the family are calling for the resignation of the deputy, the sheriff, the chief of the that area of Illinois. It's just a few hours from Chicago, where the Democratic convention will be held.
Yeah. Donald Trump had an opportunity here to actually address a black audience with a substantive answer. First, he showed up saying, I don't know the story. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, showing up to a convention of black journalists and addressing the needs and interests of black people and not being read in, not being informed on the most important, perhaps, story going on and circulating in our community right now. It seemed like a no-brainer for his team if they took black people or black communities seriously. And when Donald Trump says, well, I saw it and it didn't look good, if you said that to me, Amy, I would presume you meant, well, yeah, it didn't look good. Those officers clearly were out of line. They shot this woman who didn't, you know, who was defenseless. But when Donald Trump says it, I don't know what the heck he means. I suspect he meant, because he said with the water, I suspect that he was actually transmitting the misinformation, that outright lie, that she was attacking the officers with water, which would justify their use of force, but doesn't, because it didn't happen. So, with Donald Trump, it's very unclear. But the fundamental question that she was asking, which I think was an important one, is if you're giving all officers immunity, then things like this will happen without any accountability. How do you reconcile wanting to give everybody immunity with incidents like this where police get it wrong? And he didn't have an answer for that. I don't think he has the intellectual capacity to understand the question, but also he doesn't have the maturity to sit there and wrestle with it. Instead,